Welcome back to The Source. I'm Paul Flav. Today, 50 years ago, John F. Kennedy came to San Antonio, toured the Brooks Air Force Base, gave his final address. He traveled to Dallas and died the next day. We invite callers into the conversation, 614-8980. Tell us your story of where you were when President Kennedy was killed. And right now we turn to the very place of 1963 Dallas. In their new book, Dallas, 1963, Bill Minutaglio and Stephen L. Davis take us back in time, starting in Dallas of 1960 and recounting the flashpoints of a city that they show us is whipping itself into a fervor against JFK. Joining us to talk to us about that novel, Stephen L. Davis, an author and Texas scholar. He's also curator of the wonderful Whitliff Collection at the Texas State University. Stephen Davis, welcome to The Source.
Thanks, Paul. Good to be here.
Now, the book Dallas 63 begins 3 full years before the killing of President Kennedy. Why is that?
Well, you know, the whole point of our book is to provide the context for what happened to John Kennedy, his assassination. With all of the years of conspiracy theories that have kicked up all of this dust, it's really obscured our view of the Kennedy presidency itself and really the fact that Dallas itself had emerged as the most hostile, extreme, anti-Kennedy place in the country, where the leading citizens came together and basically viewed John Kennedy not just as a political opponent, but as an enemy of the state. And to tell that story effectively, you know, we did lots of archival research, and we realized we really needed to go back to the beginnings of the Kennedy presidency, because arguably it was Dallas, Texas that actually catapulted John Kennedy into the presidency through its extremism. And that happened in 1960, right before the election. There was a kind of amazing event that turned the tide. You know, Kennedy was behind in the polls in Texas. There were attacks on his religion, his Catholicism, which emanated from Dallas, from the leading minister in Dallas who whipped up all this frenzy and hatred about Catholicism. And there was lots of attacks on Kennedy for supporting civil rights. And he was behind in the polls to Richard Nixon 4 days before the 1960 election, when LBJ, his running mate, came to Texas to do some last-minute, very desperate campaigning. And Lyndon and Lady Bird Johnson ran into a frenzied mob on the streets of downtown Dallas, led by many of the, you know, finest-dressed, most prosperous citizens in the city. And the person who whipped up all of this was the congressman in Dallas, Bruce Alger, the most extreme man in Congress. He was the only person to vote against a program to provide free milk at lunchtime for needy school children. He condemned that as socialism. And when this mob attacked Lyndon and Lady Bird, you know, they were spitting at them, cursing at them, trying to hit them with picket signs. It goes down in history as the mink coat mob, because many of the ladies were wearing minks. They're pulling out their Nixon pins and using the pins to stab Johnson supporters. And this whole melee was caught on television cameras, and it was aired across the country that night, and led to a big backlash against Richard Nixon because of his crazed supporters in Dallas attacking demure Lady Bird Johnson. And that basically is where Nixon lost the race in Texas. The support drained from him, and many people in Texas who were even conservatives and who were opposed to John Kennedy's civil rights plank went ahead and came out and voted for Kennedy because of that ugly incident. So these people in Dallas who tried to stop Kennedy in this last-minute effort actually helped propel him into the White House.
An incredible moment that happened just before the election, and as you described, this is a Dallas of it's at the fore of a paranoid far right movement. Now, what are kind of who are the vanguard of this conservative elite in Dallas at the time?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because there were, of course, pockets of anti-Kennedy extremism across the country. And I really want to distinguish, we're not talking about people who are politically opposed to Kennedy, but people who had gone over the edge and considered him, you know, a communist agent, a traitor, a man who was committing treason against the country. And in Dallas, these people were distinguished by being the leading citizens. You had the publisher of the Dallas Morning News, Ted Dealey, whose family name adorns Dealey Plaza, who believed that John Kennedy was not a legitimate president. And Dealey actually went to the White House, confronted John Kennedy mano a mano, and told the president to his face, "America is looking for a man on horseback to lead this country. And too many of us in Texas and the Southwest think you're riding Caroline's tricycle." And along with Ted Dealey, you had the world's wealthiest man, the oil billionaire H.L. Hunt, who helped fund the attacks on Kennedy's religion. And Hunt also had a radio program. He was spending his fortune to bankroll these anti-Kennedy attacks, trying to whip up hysteria. And this program, Lifeline, was heard across the country by millions of listeners. And when John Kennedy proposed to Medicare, H.L. Hunt's announcer took to the airwaves and said that if, you know, Medicare happens, it will lead to government death panels. And you also had, as I mentioned, the congressman, Bruce Alger. At that mink coat mob, Bruce Alger was holding a protest sign that said, LBJ sold out to Yankee socialists.
And I think that brings up a really important point, which is that you've been talking about how these people thought he was a communist. They attributed a lot of different things to him, but there were very serious concerns that they had linked to just the persona that he had from being from the Northeast. Correct?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the people in Dallas and you know, Texans in particular, like to think of themselves as kind of a self-invented place. And in Dallas, you had very prosperous people, a great gathering of multimillionaires who, because of the great oil finds, you know, had become incredibly powerful in the nation's politics. And they despised Washington, D.C. H.L. Hunt, the oil billionaire, believed that Kennedy, as a representative of Washington, would try to take away his prized oil depletion allowance. And H.L. Hunt, too, you know, wanted to rewrite the American Constitution. He believed that the bottom 40% of taxpayers should not vote at all. They should get no voting power. And billionaires such as himself should be allowed to purchase up to 7 votes if they needed them. And so these people in Dallas, very anti-government, saw Kennedy as this embodiment of Northern liberalism and government meddling, and that really helped crystallize their anger against the president.
I want to include some callers in this conversation. Give us a call, 614-8980. We want to get some of your memories of Kennedy's last days on the air, and if you have any questions about the book, Dallas 1963, we've got Stephen L. Davis on the line. Joe is on the line. Joe, tell us about your memories of JFK.
Well, the day before, when he was here in San Antonio, I played hooky. I was a sophomore at Edison High School. And I went down to catch him on Broadway and Hildebrand because we had no 281 back then. And the way from the airport downtown was down Broadway. So I caught him there. It was just unbelievable, that shocking red hair and Jacqueline Kennedy's, that alabaster skin that was just beautiful. I mean, the pictures that you saw of her did or not, didn't do her any justice. And then after he passed by there, I shot across and went over to Kennedy High School. And I caught him one more time before he left to Dallas, and that was how I remember John Kennedy.
Joe, thanks so much for that call. You know, he brings up Jacqueline. You know, I think, unfortunately, the photos that people are going to remember most of are from the back of that that Cadillac. Talk a little bit about her immediate reaction to the shooting. She's getting on the plane, and she refuses, actually, to put on any other outfit.
Right. And, you know, what was really added an extra layer of sadness to this. This was Jackie's first political trip with her husband since he had become president. She had never been to Texas before. And, you know, people were warning John Kennedy to not go to Dallas on this trip. You know, there had been so many violent actions in Dallas directed towards Kennedy and towards the ideas that he believed in, that there were really these undercurrents of fear that people had that something terrible would happen to John Kennedy on this trip. It's warned repeatedly. And so, you know, she's coming in with him. They have buoyant crowds. And San Antonio, Houston, Fort Worth, Dallas.
Stephen L. Davis, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in 1 minute.
The Dallas police had been augmented by some 400 policemen called in on their day off because there were some fears and concerns in Dallas that there might be demonstrations, at least, that could embarrass the president. Because it was only on October the 24th that our ambassador to the United Nations, Adlai Stevenson, was assaulted in Dallas, leaving a dinner meeting there. From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago. Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas, but we do not know to where he has proceeded. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th president of the United States.
CBS newsman Walter Cronkite there 50 years ago tomorrow, telling us that our president had been killed. We're talking with Stephen L. Davis, co-author of Dallas 1963, whose book describes a hateful city and fomented by racial strife and anti-communist rhetoric. Give us a call if you have a question about the city on the edge or its most infamous day, 614-8980. Stephen Davis, I wanted to point out one thing out of that clip is we heard that there was talk of extra police and there was talk of an incident that our ambassador to the UN, Adlai Stevens, had been attacked. It really does sound like it was an anti-administration town.
Oh, very much so. And that really was kind of a culmination of a lot of this increasing violence and extreme rhetoric in Dallas. When Adlai Stevenson came to town, he was assaulted by an angry mob. He was, spat on. People were throwing punches at him. He was hit on the head with a picket sign. He was pushed into a getaway car, and the car was being rocked by the crowd before it managed to burst out and speed away. And Adlai Stevenson was wiping the spit off his face and turned to his host, a guy named Stanley Marcus, who operated Neiman Marcus, and said to Stanley, "My God, are these human beings or are these animals?"
Incredible. 614-8980. Were you in Dallas at the time? What are your stories from 50 years ago here in San Antonio? That's 614-8980. Stephen L. Davis is on the line. Now, at the end of the day, though, we have not a right-wing super patriot, as they like to call themselves, but a self-described Marxist who ended up killing the president. Now, what's your response to that idea, considering how whipped up into a fervor the city of Dallas had been, and that's exactly the opposite of what people would have expected?
Yeah, it's really a fascinating story, and I'll say a couple of things about that. One is, when Kennedy had been shot and nobody knew who had done it yet, the switchboard at Dallas Police Headquarters, the phones were ringing off the hook, and there were sobbing housewives on the line, each one confessing that she was certain that it had been her husband who had killed the president. That gives you an extent of the anti-Kennedy feeling in Dallas and how hateful it was. Oswald himself, nobody today can go inside his mind and say, oh, well, he was positively inspired by this hateful climate in Dallas to kill the president. I would say that give a man who's as unstable as Oswald was, he was a violent person who beat his wife. He actually tried to assassinate someone earlier, General Edwin Walker, the leader of the far right in Dallas. That's one of the stories we tell in our book. And I would say that when you have an assassin like that, we like to think that people acting logically. But, the man who shot at Ronald Reagan, John Hinckley, before he shot at Reagan, he was stalking Jimmy Carter. So, these people aren't always motivated by ideology. They're motivated by hatred. And I would say that this climate of hatred in Dallas, maybe it did not inspire Oswald, but it sure as hell didn't help matters, did it?
Stephen L. Davis is telling us about his book, Dallas 1963. I think it's incredible that wives were calling the police to report their husbands. That must give an indication of just how vitriolic the household talk about the president was.
Yeah, one of the other little stories we tell in our book, after Dallas, the presidential party was planning to go to Austin, the state capital, for a fundraiser. And there Lyndon Johnson was going to introduce the president. And he planned to conclude his introduction with a little joke. He was going to say, "And thank God, Mr. President, you came out of Dallas alive."
Oh, dear. Very telling. We've got some phone calls on the line, 614-8980. Jerry is calling us to tell us his memory of the day that Kennedy died. Jerry, you're on the air. Jerry, are you there?
Jerry, actually. Yes, I'm here. I was in third grade. I was only 8 years old, and our teacher had stepped out of the classroom for a moment in the hallway, and when she came back in, there were tears running down her face, and then she informed us that the president had been killed, and we were all pretty stunned, even at that young age. And then that afternoon when I arrived at home and my parents arrived at home from work, it was the same thing all over again. It just seemed like the bottom is falling out from under everyone everywhere. And we watched the events of the day, the rest of the evening, actually, on black and white television. And it was pretty gloomy all around for the entire weekend, actually. So,
Jerry, thanks so much for that call. I really appreciate it. It's interesting to me just how stirring this was to people, this assassination. In the beginning of the Warren Commission begins, the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy on November 22, 1963, was a cruel and shocking act of violence directed against a man, a family, a nation, and against all mankind. Now, when I read that the first time, I thought, well, that's a little hyperbolic, but maybe you can tell us that I'm wrong, Stephen L. Davis, because it sounded like Jerry, it might very well have been a crime against all humanity.
You know, and I don't think you have to have been alive at that time to hear Walter Cronkite's announcement that we listened to a few minutes ago and not be moved by that. And the thing about John Kennedy is he was an icon to the entire world. With the 50th anniversary of his killing in Dallas, you know, we've had media from the entire world descending on the city, interviewing me, interviewing my co-author, Bill Minutaglio. And he really represented a hope for a better future. You know, he was of a younger generation. He seemed to connect really well with people. And as your earlier caller mentioned, you know, he and Jackie were incredibly glamorous and sophisticated. And they just really struck people as almost kind of a Olympian couple in a certain way. Demigods had come down to Earth to help lead us into a better future. And so, you know, his just the killing would just kind of pull the rug out from the entire world, really.
614-8980, if you've got a memory of the Kennedy family that you'd like to share with us on this, the day before their progenitor was gunned down in Dallas. The Kennedy family's support of integration plays a huge role in the Dallas vitriol that's directed towards them. Tell us about where Dallas was in the integration fight.
Yeah, well, Dallas was a little bit behind other places. It was the largest city in the country that had still refused to integrate its public facilities. In 1961, everything was still segregated, and you saw this kind of struggle for the soul of Dallas during this time. On the one side, you had people like Stanley Marcus of Neiman Marcus, who I mentioned earlier, trying desperately to get the city to integrate. You had very brave civil rights workers like Juanita Kraft of the NAACP, who recruited hundreds of teenage kids to come lead the sit-ins at the drugstores, stand-ins at the movie theaters. And working together, these people all basically were able to crumble the last bits of resistance to integration in Dallas. So, and this happened right in the middle of the Kennedy presidency. It contributed to this sense of unease, even paranoia among the far right who supported segregation at that time.
And I want to get some of these callers on soon, but I am very interested in the reaction you've gotten from Dallasites. You're from Dallas, and you wrote this book about Dallas that does not put it in a very good light. And I got to imagine that being from Dallas, these folks are pretty sensitive to what happened 50 years ago.
Oh, of course. You know, the Kennedy assassination is really Dallas's original sin. It's woven into the fabric of who the city is. And for generations, it's been a terrible blight. You know, people from Dallas can travel around the world, and when they see somebody and tell them where they're from, people immediately say, ah, the city that killed Kennedy. And
wow.
You've seen that Dallas struggle with this whole idea. You know, they wanted to demolish the Texas School Book Depository where Oswald fired from. They wanted to really obliterate any memory that this event had happened here. And and basically, in recent years, the city has kind of turned itself around. It's become much more diverse. And, you know, the city's elected Ron Kirk, the first African-American mayor in Dallas, who had enjoyed wide support. The current mayor or the current sheriff of Dallas is lesbian and Hispanic, and the city has changed quite a bit since 1963. But there's still this kind of old guard there, and those people hate, of course, that we've brought back these stories of what defined the city during the Kennedy era. You know, as I mentioned at the outset of our conversation, Paul, the conspiracy theories have kicked up all of this dust, and it's really kind of blotted out the real story of what things were like in Dallas. And we've brought back the focus on the way the actual conditions were when Kennedy was president and how Dallas had become rabidly anti-Kennedy and, you know, notorious across the nation as America's city of hatred. It's not everybody's really comfortable being reminded of that history.
Jesus is on the line. Jesus, we've got a few seconds left. Give us your comment.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. I just wanted to make the comment that I was a young boy in the sixth grade when that happened, and coming from a community in South Texas in the border that was overwhelmingly Hispanic, it was very tragic for us. People had pictures of John F. Kennedy and Jacqueline as if they were the king and queen of England, which is traditional in Europe. Well, we had it in our homes next to a picture of Christ or anything like that. So when he died, it was like all of our dreams, all our aspirations of finally being liberated came to a standstill. And thank God that LBJ came in, and then with the Civil Rights Act and everything that Kennedy helped start, did things change for us.
Jesus, thanks so much for calling. This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. It's important to remember that there were 100,000 people that came out to cheer the president that day, isn't it, though, Stephen Davis?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you had the largest crowds ever in the city of Dallas assembled to greet Kennedy, to repudiate the far right, to show their love for the president and their respect for the presidency.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Stephen Davis is the author of Dallas 1963, a great read. Tune in tomorrow for Texas Matters at 3 o'clock. Thanks a lot.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.